We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You're a good soldier, choosing your battles. Pick yourself up and dust yourself.
Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman in for Joe Rose and Zach Krantz here on WQAM. We have breaking news that it just came in before the end of the last segment, and that is that the United States, along with Canada and Mexico, will host the 2026 FIFA World Cup. The United States will host 60 of the 80 matches. Mexico will host 10. Canada will host 10, and the U.S., with cities all over the country, including Miami, will host matches. So I'll just go and read off all the cities that are in the bid book. Atlanta.
Now, are these guaranteed, Chris, to get the games, or is there now a whole?
Yes.
The bid book is sort of becomes binding. Binding bid book.
Correct. So the cities are Atlanta, Baltimore, Boston, Cincinnati, Dallas, Denver, Edmonton, Guadalajara, Houston, Kansas City, Los Angeles, Mexico City, Miami, Montreal, Monterrey, Nashville, New York, New Jersey, Orlando, Philadelphia, Santa Clara, they call it San Francisco Bay Area, Seattle, Toronto, and Washington, D.C. So all those cities will be hosting matches at the World Cup. Now, in terms of the Miami elements of this, so Miami has will be part of this. They'll host a couple of group stage games. They've also applied for a quarterfinal and a third round match, or that might even be the third place match.
Boom.
So in terms of the number of cities applying for hosting quarterfinals, Miami might not get it. So there are, let's see, 8, 10, 11 cities that want the quarterfinal, the third place match. So, maybe that might be a third round then, because otherwise
there's not enough games to go around.
Yeah, there's not enough games.
Although,
to go around.
If in the bid book doesn't list where the third place game is, there will have to be. I assume it's not. Remember the NCAA tournament used to have a third place game, probably way before your time.
Really?
They actually played a third place game that was not nationally televised, that started at 7 p.m. before the national championship game. And then eventually people realized no one cares who finishes in third place.
Right. I mean, and the third place game at the World Cup is ridiculous. I remember the Gold Cup had a third place game, and it was just this awful game.
I mean,
the emotional letdown.
It's a waste. Yeah.
And particularly, you know, so let's say this year they have a semifinal in the World Cup that's Brazil, France, Germany, Spain. That's in play, right, based off the way that the bracket works. So let's say Spain loses in the semifinal and France is in the semifinal, and they play in the third place game. In theory, that's a great game.
Right.
But all the players that are going to be playing on that field are going to want to stay healthy, because the far more important thing is their upcoming club season. Like, you're getting guys trying at 50% who are trying not to get hurt.
And also, they're coming off 4 days earlier, one of the most emotional losses and setbacks of their life also. So to have to step back on the pitch after that, although you do wonder, will they package the ticket so you have to take the third place game if you want to buy the rest of sort of this strip, the ticket book for the other game. So you're sort of, as a consumer, forced into it. What I thought was fascinating, and I mentioned this before we went to the break, and you always tell me this in the larger sense, that soccer transcends mere sport and everything else, and that in the world, that's the way it is. But even in this case in South Florida, Chris, you were mentioning from the bid book that you had gotten a copy of, this literally, what we just got the news now, could transform South Florida technologically, transportation-wise, and even impact our NFL team.
Right. So the city of Miami is obviously included in the bid book, and so they are going to try and host, you know, latter stages, quarterfinal matches of this tournament. And so what Miami has done in terms of growing the sport in this area without an MLS team,
right?
Frank, you look at all the other cities, right? Atlanta United. Baltimore doesn't have a team, but they have a significant communities in their area that are, you know, trying to grow and you know, they're a good soccer city. Boston has an MLS team. Cincinnati is getting one. Dallas has one. Denver has one. Houston has one. Kansas City has one. one. LA has one. Nashville is getting one. New York, New Jersey have two. Orlando has one. Philly has one. San Jose / Bay Area has Seattle, Toronto, Washington, D.C. These are all cities that have MLS teams. Miami, theirs is coming.
Right.
They've managed to create this sense that they are an important destination city for this sport, even without Major League Soccer. And that is at least in part because of the demographics of the area, right? To me, you could not host a World Cup in this country without including Miami based off the
melting pot city for the melting pot sport.
Right. The gateway to the Americas, the number of South Americans that live here, the number of Central Americans that live here. I can't imagine the U.S. would probably play here if you're sort of picking out, because you'd want to have Colombia play here, Brazil play here.
Oh, absolutely.
Argentina play here.
If you are traveling through the American Airlines terminal for the 2026 World Cup, mm-hmm. you may want to arrive now to get your bags through. Chris, can you imagine in a World Cup, and obviously the American terminal in Miami International is the gateway to South America, what that scene's going to be like in June 2026?
Yeah, oh no, it's going to be mayhem. But that, for me, the United bid has promised $11 billion in profit to FIFA for this World Cup. So one of the areas that Morocco, it was deemed to have an advantage, was that they had to build 12 stadiums in order to be ready in Morocco to host the World Cup. And so because of the fact that everything is built here.
Infrastructure.
So the next step is, well, what can you improve on?
Yes.
And frankly, where can you give FIFA kickbacks? Let's be honest. Because the member nations of FIFA, they like money over the table. They like money under the table better.
And they like when the U.S. Justice Department is not watching particularly
more. Right, exactly. So the construction projects that can happen and probably will need to happen as a result of hosting World Cup games is going to probably be the effects of that are going to be seen around the country. And we'll see if maybe you see expansion of, you know, Brightline, expansion of the Metro Rail system, expansion of the airport.
That's mentioned in the bid book, though,
right,
Chris. So just
right.
So people know, this is not pie in the sky or wishful thinking. I have a question for you. It's mentioned in the bid book that they're going to need more infrastructure to get people to and from the games, teams mm-hmm. to and from practices.
Number of hotels.
You're going to mention the practice facilities there also that are impacted. Who's paying?
It's a good question.
In other words, Brightline already, you know, is this massive project, a private project. Metro Rail is a municipal mm-hmm. project. We've seen at times Metro Rail finally is getting to the airport now. We're talking about getting to other regions also.
They also include New Smart, which is Strategic Miami Area Rapid Transit. I've not heard of that, but I guess that I've read like Doug Hanks articles about it. So I don't know what it is.
Right, but
this is at
a point when even the light rail system in Fort Lauderdale finally mm-hmm. got voted down, as people mm-hmm. saying it's not realistic in a city where people generally shy from public transportation anyway, mm-hmm. don't have that mentality. So I wonder what Stephen Ross and his people did. In other words, I believe the commitment to a new Dolphins training facility. Mm-hmm. If Stephen Ross put it in a bid book and put his corporate name on it, that will happen because mm-hmm. he's involved. I don't think, even though it's in the bid book, Metro Rail and Brightline and other things, that's necessarily guaranteed. We would like to. We would hope to. You know, there would be a chance for. Mm-hmm. So I'll be curious about that. Let me ask you this, though. Because you spoke about this, Adam Beasley was on our airwaves and our sister station at 790 The Ticket discussing it. Chris, does this guarantee for the people living around the Nova Southeastern University area and in Davie right now, are the Dolphins moving? Will the Dolphins, do you believe now, definitively have a new practice and training facility away from Davie?
So here is what the bid book, and I hate referencing something that's frankly so boring, but the details that they list, so they provide a bunch of, they're basically describing the infrastructure that's in place in every city
right.
in the United States. And they list all the hotel rooms and the airports and all that. And one of the sections is what they call team base camp facilities, where a team is going to set up and basically spend their entire World Cup, right? So they're going to stay in this area. They're going to practice in this area.
And based on your experience as the soccer voice at Be In Soccer, among some other people, mm-hmm. how long would that be? In other words, let's say Brazil comes in and is based in South mm-hmm. Florida. How long would they be there? Because I see teams have now been training for a while in mm-hmm. Russia in advance. So how long would the Brazil? How long would our good friend Neymar and his friends be in town?
I would imagine probably up to a week before the tournament. I don't know what happens, like, if, because frankly, I only know about base camps as it relates to the U.S., and those get knocked out in the round of 16.
Okay.
And so I don't know if, like, they stay there until the final, but I do know that at the very least through the group stage, then maybe they consolidate and stay in the cities where they're going to be playing.
So how long total time? How many days?
Probably 3 weeks, probably.
Which is a significant time.
Yeah.
Number two, are practices open to the public? Is there much public interaction?
I mean, there might be some public interaction with, you know, fans maybe going afterwards to get autographs. I don't think practices would probably be open to the public.
So the public wouldn't necessarily have access, but they would be seen around town,
correct,
for example.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Probably be doing, if you're a South American team, definitely doing events and that kind of thing. So the two suggestions that the bid book offers for base camp facilities for a team to set up their home camp.
Sounds like they're going to the moon, base camp. Okay,
base camp.
All right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Matt Damon will be there.
Future MLS Miami team training site. As a future home to MLS's Miami football team, this training site is designed to serve professional football year-round. It will serve as both a venue-specific training site and a team-based camp. And then, and this is where I found the information, and
right,
I was like, wait, hang on a second, what is this? And it was funny because it came up, I was researching an MLS game that I was doing,
mm-hmm,
and I was just going through it, and I command F for Mac,
right,
it's same as control F, Miami. I just went to every section of the bid book where Miami comes up, and I'm like, wait a second, what? Future Miami Dolphins training site, Miami, Florida. Scheduled to open in 2022, this future training site for the NFL Miami Dolphins will feature three pristine athletic fields, at least two of which will be natural grass playing surfaces. So they, and so I'm like, wait a second, the Dolphins have a new practice facility? I didn't realize this, and they must have committed to it in bidding for the World Cup and in bidding to host here. So you'd imagine that they're going to build their own place. Now, the Sun Sentinel has done some further reporting on this about it potentially being in Miramar.
Right.
To me, if I'm the Dolphins, I feel like they're almost a Broward entity at this point because they practice in Davie, because their stadium's
on the
county line.
Well, I mean, they really hug the county line.
Right.
So I think they've done as well as any of our team. The Panthers are the Broward team. The Heat,
yeah,
are the Dade team. The Marlins became the Dade team. It's just, mm-hmm, sort of accepted. So Miramar is about as hugging the county line as you can.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious about one thing. You know the mega mall they're building on,
yep,
75 at the,
mm-hmm,
big curve there,
yep,
which basically straddles both counties also. I wonder, that project is so big anyway with its theme park and its largest mall, bigger than Mall of America,
and
housing and everything, exactly. I wonder if that could also be a potential site. In other words, if you're going to, mm-hmm, go big, go biggest.
Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah, so the Dolphins will be a potential training site and scheduled to open in 2022. So this, what happened today, which is, again, if you're just joining us, the United States have won the bid to host the World Cup in 2026. It may sort of lead to, it may guarantee a new Dolphins training facility somewhere other than Davie and perhaps a bit further south.
But you say may, but one, Stephen Ross, pretty much what he said he has done.
Yes.
Whether it's rebuilding the stadium, putting the canopy there,
mm-hmm,
making it part of the Super Bowl rotation,
yeah,
bringing in the football championship series and championship game. He's done all that. He's been a man of his word. Based on what you see on the bid book here, wouldn't that therefore pretty much be a done deal? Could you see Stephen Ross putting a bid book together for his adopted hometown,
mm-hmm,
and then bringing in all these international friendlies like we spoke about, Man U and Man City, mm-hmm, and all these other teams that
Colombia,
have come in?
Colombia, Venezuela play here in September.
You know, so, I mean, he's done all this groundwork here anyway. Could you see that not happening? In other words,
we talked about
LeBron in previous hours. What percentage chance do you believe that that prophecy of a new Dolphins facility, mm-hmm, in quote-unquote Miami by 2022 is done?
I'd say 85-90%.
Okay, because, so pretty much,
I mean,
going to happen.
Like, I don't know sort of what the history of these kinds of documents is and if every page is executed to the book, but you'd have to imagine if they put it in there, it's because they plan on doing it.
Right.
And Adam Beasley and your colleague Omar Kelly have done plenty of reporting on this, that now this is in the works and it's happening now. And so we'll end up seeing where they end up putting it and what it looks like. But again, the United States will be hosting the World Cup in 2026. We actually plan to talk about the World Cup in terms of the actual playing of it,
right,
starting tomorrow over the course of the show. So we'll get to that as well. Some more NBA stuff, plenty to get to here on QAM. Radio.com. Radio.com. Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman in for Joe Rose and Zach Krantz here on WQAM. feel like I have not had the chance to sort of properly convey. I mean, obviously, we're talking about the details and the way that applies to Miami. I'm really damn excited the U.S. is going to be hosting the World Cup.
Can you wait all 8 years?
I think I can.
Do you think it will resurrect the U.S. soccer program from where it is now, which is out of the World Cup? Do you think it'll resurrect Miami to finally David Beckham, instead of talking about getting a team, actually having a team with a real name and a real stadium and a real place?
Now, in fairness to David, he did Instagram that he did a lot of work this week, in this past week. There's a picture of him on a tarmac saying, we got a lot of things working, but I do think that...
Because the stadium's going to be on a tarmac.
Right. Okay. But, like, so my thing is... So we have two televisions on in here. We're watching the BN Sports coverage of the hosting bid, and in case anything new comes in, that'll be up. But we have CBS4 on the other TV, and I saw they sort of broke into CBS this morning with a banner that's, you know, breaking news: U.S. is going to host the 2026 World Cup. To me, the World Cup is the only event that breaks through the sporting and, frankly, news landscape in soccer, right? So when MLS has a cup final, when the MLS season starts, when there's a Champions League final, when the Premier League season starts, that's for soccer fans, right? Soccer fans watch that. The World Cup breaks through in a way that nothing else in soccer does. And so it's why it's devastating that the U.S. didn't qualify for this one, because the U.S. break through when they play in World Cups. The U.S. women break through when they play in World Cups. The U.S. would break through if they played in Olympics. They haven't played in the last two. If they qualify for the 2020 Olympics, people will be, you know, watching that, and because it's wrapping yourself in the flag and you're watching the United States.
But the Olympics still have that age limit, plus two or plus three.
It's a U23 tournament. But still, right, it's, we care about sports we don't normally care about during the Olympics, and soccer can be one of them.
It's just like you said about the Olympics, there's things we talk curling,
correct,
for example.
Right.
We'll watch anything.
During the Summer Olympics, it's all the badminton's on, right?
Like, ping pong.
The
table tennis.
The table tennis is on. So there's all these different sports that people, you know, that sort of end up being talked about. So the World Cup is an event that actually registers in this country now. ESPN helped make it that way, and the U.S. having success and hosting it in 94 helped make it that way. So the fact that they're not at this World Cup stunts the growth. If they make the World Cup 2022, it'll be the same kind of case again. The fact that it's going to be here and that people across America can go to games. Now, it's going to be really expensive to go to games here.
Sure.
But the fact that you're going to see national teams playing competitive games, like, across the country, we sell out stadiums for teams playing their preseason here. Right, so Manchester City and Bayern Munich are going to be basically setting up here for preseason, and Real Madrid and Manchester United are going to be playing a preseason game here, and there'll be 65,000 people at Hard Rock Stadium there to watch it.
Because it's the closest you can get to touch the real thing. Just like those NBA,
it's the closest you get to the highest level.
Just
right?
Like the NBA when they send their teams to exhibitions to China and they pack the arena, and you're going, wait a minute, the other exhibitions today are in Tulsa.
Yeah,
exactly. They're just doing that,
or they send regular season
games
to the UK.
Here's my question to you, because as again, I'm sort of, we have sort of inside outside here, roles reversed. You're the soccer insider, be in sport and other places, do MLS games. Here's my question. There's always been two thoughts on how to develop a U.S. national team.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been to send your best players abroad to play in the Premier League, La Liga, the Bundesliga, to get that ultimate highest level of competition. The other thought has been to develop them through your domestic league, which then builds your domestic league, which players like Clint Dempsey still can grow as players also. We now know we're 8 years out. So the 2026 U.S. World Cup team players, correct me if I'm wrong here, about 14, 15, 16 years old at the moment. Would that be correct?
You could probably have some players, like the maximum age you take to a World Cup would be like 33, 34.
Okay, so, or
so
even
you
a little
have,
older.
Like, right, between like 12 and 25 right now.
This might change, Chris, so you're not on the clock, and we're not going to replay this back in 4, 6, 8 years, but... Which way do you think, now that you're guaranteed as a host nation, you will have a team in the 2026 World Cup, how will the U.S. 2026 World Cup team be developed? Will it be through players going overseas, internationally, Spain, Italy, probably not Greece as much anymore,
England
Portugal, Germany,
sure, yep.
Other places like that? Or will it be through the growth of a major U.S. Soccer League where you'll tell me in 2026, hey, Ira, half of this team are MLS products. Which way do you think the 2026 U.S. World Cup soccer team is going to have its roster built upon?
The way that it's trending right now is actually both, right? So basically each MLS team is required to have an academy. And academies are now starting to produce players, right? And some of them are producing players that are then being bought by clubs in Europe. Like, there's a couple of players that have been, you know, built through the Dallas system that have gone to Europe and are now applying their trade abroad. To me, what this does is it gives U.S. soccer a target, right? So it gives them a date.
That's right.
So by this
right.
date, we need to be at our highest possible level, and we need to be building towards that date. I think you can kind of balance both. I would say in the next 6 years, you want to try and build the best possible players, however that by any means, right?
And let me ask you what, jump in here, and I apologize.
Sure.
Could the U.S. collegiate system, or is it just too obtuse from what the World Development Program is ever
so
be part of that?
It is so backwards from what the rest of the world does. I've actually had conversations with a few of my BN colleagues, some who come from abroad, and they don't understand college sports.
Okay.
They don't understand the whole idea of it. Like, wait a second. You want to be a professional age 20? Like, around the world, you better be at like ready to play for big clubs at age 20, not starting your career at age 20. And so to me, and you're starting to see it across MLS, like there are 16, 17-year-olds that are playing for MLS teams now, and that's the way that it works around the world.
I mean, Jozy Altidore came in very young
right?
He was one of the first.
I mean, Christian Pulisic started for Borussia Dortmund age 17. That's how the world works, right? That like the world, if you're ready to go, you have to be ready by age 17, 18, 19. And so to me, it starts with in this country, right? So you start with academies finding players, going across their states, across their areas. In Miami's case, it would be trying to recruit everyone in South Florida and trying to find the best possible players, developing them. And then to me, at that point, you let economics do its work, right? So if a team comes in from Europe and says, hey, we'll buy your player for $5 million, then you say, all right, you can have them. But I think once you get to around 2024, you want to get to a stage where you're building towards that World Cup and maybe starting to bring some of those players back. To me, what this does more than anything is it gives Major League Soccer an incentive to spend big. What you don't realize is that the reason why MLS to me has not grown to the stage that I think, you know, people don't respect it enough is because there's only like, and I have the numbers here because the MLS Players Union releases players' salaries.
Okay.
And so the number of people in this country that make $1 million playing soccer in MLS is much smaller than you would think. It's 46. There are 46 players that play in the United States that make $1 million or more. That's kind of obscene.
Just from their MLS salary.
Just from their MLS salary. That's low. And I'll go through it here during the break and pick out how many of them are U.S., Canadian, or U.S. or Canadian players. So, what this for me needs to be is a signal, all right, it's time to spend. It's time to throw down. It's time to raise the minimum salary from $54,500, which is the minimum salary in MLS. That's low. Right. And so the amount of money that needs to come into this game in order for it to really grow and be at the level of the world stage is significant. Significant. The fact that the record transfer fee for an MLS team is $15 million and the record transfer fee for a European club is $250. Like that, those numbers need to climb in a significant way. The only way that the U.S. gets demonstrably better at this sport is by literally throwing billions of dollars at the problem.
And you think there's money to be thrown?
I think now because of this target, right? Because you're saying in 8 years from now, we're going to host a sporting tournament that's going to make us $11 billion. I think you start to go to sponsorship, to Nike, to Gatorade and be like, hey, this is happening in 8 years. Give us money now so that we can start to build out these programs and start to develop a tournament so that when we get to World Cup 2026, we're making the semifinal and we're sort of arriving on the world stage to being a soccer nation, help us get there. There needs to be tons of money invested in this game. TV companies throwing money at it as well for the rights as well. The money that's going to come as a result from this, both in local areas, hopefully we'll see some of the benefits of that in Miami and across the country, is going to be the biggest way that the game grows before 2026.
And my question is, with sort of these intersection of two sports and what football is going through. I don't want to say football's on the downturn of any, but there's a lot of collective
questions going forward.
Sure. Could someone swoop in with the speed of South Florida? And honestly, when I drive around, you see so many more soccer fields than football fields. And when I'm driving around on Saturdays, you see so many more soccer leagues than peewee football leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Could it become and get to the point we've been waiting for years for this to happen, where the quick, fast kid, the runner, gets moved to soccer? Mm-hmm. One, for safety. He's not going to have brain injury when he's 40 and 50 and reading all these other stories. He's not going to be under the collective sort of stranglehold of what the NFL has become.
His body won't have fallen apart.
Could this signal part of that change also? Could the great speed of South Florida that has transformed college football from the lumbering Big Ten type of player to what Miami and the Hurricanes in their heyday had, could that speed now move to soccer?
100%, because I think there's a target now. Because the fact that we have this thing that's going to be happening in 8 years, everything is geared towards that now. All of the development, all the conversations in communities. The reason why this news for me is so big is because there is a target. 1994 allowed the U.S. to arrive on the world stage. Okay, we're going to take this seriously now. We're going to host this tournament. And they had to promise, right? In order to get 94, they had to promise that they were going to start a domestic soccer league. That's what MLS is, right?
Right.
That was the promise to FIFA that they were going to get this going. They did. And now 20 years later, it's a successful business. There was a story that came out yesterday that that MLS is one of the 10, is in the top 10 of revenue among soccer leagues in the world, right? Which for such a young league is super impressive, right? You see in stadiums at Atlanta, they're setting records drawing 70,000 people to go watch Atlanta United play. In Seattle, they've been averaging 45,000 fans.
In a football stadium.
Right, in a football stadium for a decade, right? There's all these different signs that, oh, it's growing. Now you have a target, right? So from its beginning to now its real arrival in the mainstream sporting conscience. The only way the mainstream sporting conscience pays attention to the sport of soccer is via the World Cup. And so you now have this target 8 years from now. All right, we're aiming for this. And hopefully the United States gets their act together and, you know, starts to develop in areas that, frankly, they don't now. Like, to me, there aren't enough Miami-based players that play for the U.S. national team. There aren't enough Hispanics that play for the U.S. men's national team. Like, there needs to be growth. This is the first step towards an eight-year plan to try. Winning it is probably going to be a bit extreme, but competing in 2026.
So, Chris, if this is two steps forward after the devastation of not making the World Cup that's about to begin in Russia right now, how critical does this make Qatar 2022 for the U.S. having to be there? In other words, could there be any worse thing to happen for the buildup to this
momentum,
2026 than to have missed the previous two World Cups?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it would be devastating. Absolutely. Yeah, they need to make the next World Cup. I mean, independent of winning the hosting rights, they need to make the next World Cup.
But especially now more than ever.
Right, exactly.
You can't take two steps forward.
They need to be better in soccer than Panama, Honduras, and Costa Rica. Like that, and they have been, right? For 20 years, they've topped the group of qualifying to go to the World Cup. This was a significant step back, but I think it's all of this that's happening, both for the next month, a World Cup is happening, and winning the hosting rights in 2026 are a wake-up call that this needs to change. And hopefully we'll see the requisite, and we'll see the U.S. become a legitimate competitor on the global stage to win. Winning the World Cup is strong, but compete to go win, to be that next group of teams in behind the Germanys, the Spains, even, you know, Italy will have recovered, England, and all these major teams. So I think that what this World Cup allows them to do is to start that growth. So hopefully this is the beginning. And again, if you're just joining us, the United States, along with Mexico and Canada, have won the rights to host the 2026 World Cup. More on that, and we'll also talk some more NBA as we carry on here on WQAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Chris Whittingham and Ira Winderman in for Joe Rhodes and Zach Krantz here on WQAM. Here until 10, we'll talk to Stefano Fissaro of ESPN at 9:20 about the Rockets, and he is also Argentinian, so we'll get his thoughts on the forthcoming World Cup. Again, if you're just joining us, the U.S. has won the hosting rights for 2026. Ira has allowed us, given me a pass to leave the show for at least a moment to go bang some pots and pans in the street. I'd be down for it. Would you be okay carrying this segment if I can go and bang some pots and pans?
Do you think this is getting, I mean, you've been so excited here now for the last hour and a half. Do you think that it'll be a slow build up to this? Or do you think in the soccer hotbeds and in the MLS cities and places like this, I mean, this is almost like being greeted as their cities being awarded a Super Bowl, let's say.
Now, to me, it's interesting because I think you see a lot of the host countries build up because you see stadiums coming up from the ground. That's not going to be happening here. I don't think there's every stadium is like that could be used in the World Cup. It's already been built. So I don't know, other than signage or, you know, marketing. I don't know how you sort of figure out a way to build the hype 8 years in advance. I think once we get to 2024, 2025, and I'd imagine on the networks of Fox, which will have the rights to the 2026 World Cup, which, by the way, here's a little bit of a sneaky under the table deal. So because Qatar got the rights in 2022,
right,
and because it was so backwards and bribed and corrupt, FIFA just sort of said, "Hey, we'll give you 2026, and you don't have to bid competitively for it." And Fox, in return, said, "If you give the United States the World Cup, we'll pay an extra $150 million." So today's decision cost Fox $150 million, which they'll make back pretty easily.
Right.
So Fox will have the rights to the 2026 World Cup. And so, I imagine there'll be a massive build and a massive marketing campaign. But 8 years in advance, that's quite – I think people will be, oh, cool. And then in 6 years, oh, yeah, that's right, we have the World Cup. And they'll start to build that way. But
so Skip Bayless is going to rip soccer for 8 years, and then Fox is going to carry the World Cup.
That's correct.
Okay.
I just hope – can I just say, as someone who will be in my 30s by the time this World Cup will start, I just hope that our conversation will have evolved from "Can soccer make it in America by 2026? Can we, as a pundit culture, now, however it is, like the TV shows will probably be, like, you know, hologrammed into our living rooms by then. But can we figure out a way to advance the discussion on this sport, like, a little bit?
Okay, but it only happens one way. The U.S. sharing with Mexico and Canada is getting the World Cup in 2026. Will Miami have an MLS team by then at an MLS stadium?
Stop.
Okay, you tell me this. How long does it take to build a stadium? In other words, when
it'll
is this?
It'll be 2 years.
I think at least 2 years.
Yeah.
I think it's the low end.
Mm-hmm.
And they
have said they're going to play at a temporary venue in 2020.
Which I think is the worst idea in the world because you want to have that Portland-type experience.
The rollout.
In Columbus, even what the Red Bull moved into.
I mean, in fairness, Atlanta, they started at Georgia Tech Stadium, and they built everything that they
But they also have crowds in the 60,000s.
No, but they started at Georgia Tech with the crowds in, like, the 45,000s, like, from day one playing at a venue that isn't theirs.
But what's the venue going to be in Miami for David Beckham's
Island? That's a good question.
Isn't it going to be more in the 20,000s or 30 max?
Well, the stadium itself will be like, I think 25 is what they're shooting for. But, I mean, maybe they started Hard Rock. I think Hard Rock would be a brilliant venue for them to start. I think Hard Rock is a great place for soccer now. Great place with the way that it's designed, the way that it looks, the acoustics. Like, to me, that's a perfect place to go and start. But
I guess you would put tarps somewhere to make it feel more intimate.
Yeah. You can probably put tarps over the upper bowl. Maybe for the first game, you get like Orlando in and you start with a derby match and then you kind of go from there. But yeah, I think that you can put tarps over the upper deck or just sell out the lower deck in
Marlins
the middle
Park,
bowl.
Just not
for me.
Configured the right way.
Yeah, I think if it was a stadium that can look more like a soccer, I think it would look pretty terrible.
I mean, remember, they were going to build the soccer stadium outside of Marlins Park.
And also,
that was another option.
And also, the baseball season overlaps with the MLS season, so it would be pretty tough to figure out dates and get the field sorted out. So let's go ahead and talk some NBA here, because I think the audience is probably just about sick of me talking about soccer. Maybe we'll do it more in the next hour and actually talk about the upcoming World Cup and how you can watch it as a fan that maybe doesn't know a ton about the sport. So I wanted to talk about actually Kawhi Leonard here, because I feel like his free agent, with LeBron overshadows everyone, right? But Kawhi Leonard, for me, has kind of been swept under the rug. So there was a picture that went around of him at a Chipotle in Aventura. now, that obviously doesn't mean anything, but I found this report interesting from the San Antonio Express News. The trade chatter involving Kawhi Leonard has cooled off over the last few weeks, with some around the NBA surprised it gained significant traction in the first place. With the NBA draft fast approaching, the Spurs are attempting to settle in-house business first, starting with Leonard. League sources tell the Express News head coach Greg Popovich and Leonard are trying to schedule a meeting and hopefully come to a decision on offering Leonard the five-year, $219 million Supermax extension he's eligible to receive. So, first off, if you're San Antonio, do you offer that?
I mean, that's a great question based on the injury history. Mm-hmm. Remember, I think it was ESPN did a report that some people believe that Kawhi Leonard won't be able to run anymore, won't be able to jump off of two legs like he needs to, will be a diminished player. So I think whoever is considering doing that really wants to buy time of this season to see what's there or not. On the other hand, if you're Kawhi, you want that commitment for that exact reason. San Antonio generally does not get free agents. LaMarcus Aldridge has been somewhat of an outlier, so they're somewhat desperate. But Chris, what I don't understand is this. Until this Kawhi Leonard thing happened, wasn't Greg Popovich viewed as the universal donor, as everyone loves Pop?
Yep.
Not media people, not Israel Gutierrez who interview him at the end of the first quarter, but in general, players do, and that's why he moved on to become our next Olympic coach after Mike Krzyzewski. Even now, LeBron is mentioned as, you know, why would LeBron go to, you know, San Antonio? Because of Pop. What went so wrong there? That for the first time, look, we've known that Tony Parker has butted heads in Manu because Pop has his way about him, but you get past it. But what went so wrong there that Kawhi and his people weren't even talking to Pop, weren't even talking to the Spurs? Is it the case of sort of like the Steve Kerr fatigue from winning championships that Kawhi got Pop fatigue? And could it be that the season away from Pop is almost his hiatus year? He needed that, like when you go over to Europe before you take your next job or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's what I need to know is who changed there? Did Pop change? Did Kawhi change? Did the situation change?
And not even just Popovich, but also, I mean, it seemed like his teammates were having to go at him in the locker room.
Yes.
That, oh, you're healthy enough to play.
Right.
And
Tony,
you know,
Parker had a much worse injury and came back sooner.
Right. He gave a quote that, oh, I've had injuries much worse than this. So for me, the fact that this has happened, it kind of signals it's a little bit Belichickian in a way, right? So finally, this year, after 17 years, it looks to kind of have broken a little bit with Brady and with Gronk and with some of the other things happening in the Pats organization, where finally it seems like they're a little bit sick of him. But I feel like that may be happening in San Antonio, and I think maybe it was taken for granted. Ah, Kawhi's fine. He doesn't talk. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't upset anybody. He's this calm guy and easy to get along with. And maybe he just finally got fed up with it and said, no, I have my own thoughts. I have things that I want to do in my career. I want to, you know, make more, have more endorsement money, be more famous. And I don't want to be treated like you treated Tim Duncan. I want to, you know, be given preferential treatment. And frankly, based on the fact that he was 2014 Finals MVP,
right,
and looked like he was going to be the only player that was going to give the Warriors a challenge last year, kind of deserves it, doesn't it?
Yeah, but not in Pop Land. But not
sure.
In other words, and LeBron deserved more leeway than Pat Riley was going to grant him, but Pat Riley drew a line in the sand, said, this is us, this is the culture. The culture supersedes any player, something he might have changed in retrospect there also. So I'm just curious. In other words, when do the Spurs stop being the Spurs? Do they stop being the Spurs when the talent goes away? Do they stop being the Spurs when Greg Popovich goes away? Which means more? And I'm going to, matter of fact, just to sort of relate so people can relate to here, when do the Heat stop being the Heat, Chris Whittingham? When Pat Riley leaves or when the talent leaves?
Well, the talent has already left. So,
right.
So I feel like—
And have
like,
they stopped being the Heat?
No, they have. Well, and you know what's funny is that I feel like— don't you feel like they can carry on even after Pat Riley leaves? Like, as long as there's a continual line of succession, right? That when Battier takes over or you know, Nick Arison or whomever takes
so
over.
That's the question.
Or if Eric Spoelstra continues on,
right,
and then puts his guy in place, is there a succession?
The question I have with Kawhi. Is if the Spurs realize we're going to bring Kawhi back, we're going to give him $220 million, we're going to do all this, but it doesn't work with Pop, can they comfortably say to themselves, Kawhi's team now? And instead of Pop, it'll be Monty Williams. It'll be Ettore Messina. It'll be someone else who takes over there
Becky
instead.
Hammond.
and Becky Hammon, and it works in that direction. So I think there's a really good litmus test for what means more to an NBA team, an ultimate superstar or ultimate culture.
Chris Whittingham, Ira Winderman, and for Joe Rose and Zach Kranz here on QAM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.